time now for Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ehrens.
Well, welcome on in to IUP Plus today. Appreciate you joining us. Appreciate you finding us on either News for Utah Plus, where you're streaming, or on YouTube, or the internets, wherever you find us. We are grateful you're here. We've got a lot to discuss today, a lot going on in Utah politics and national politics. I want to welcome in my panelists today, Adam Gardner, Rusty Cannon. A little tease for watching us on TV instead of just listening to this as a podcast. Rusty, your title says AKA Roost.
Yeah,
Do you care to explain that?
Yeah, my nickname as a kid was Roost. It started as Red Rooster.
Okay.
Obviously because of my hair.
Oh.
I'm not going to say...
It's like a rusty color.
Say it how they said it, but Red Rooster, which eventually whittled its way down to Roost, so I still see people I knew in elementary school, and that's what they'll call me.
Do you feel like you have a little PTSD from that? Like, are you
No,
bullied?
I had a wonderful childhood.
Okay.
There's no regrets.
Adam, what did they call you in elementary school?
I can't say that on the air.
Oh, okay.
But maybe I can get away with it on podcast. Okay. I don't know.
Yeah.
Now they called me Adam or AG.
Yeah,
but now AG. I'm in politics and people are like AG and it's like weird.
ASG Consulting. That's
a cool
thing.
I had to throw that S in there.
I know, I love that. Okay, introduce yourself. Tell us who you really are in the political sphere.
Okay, Adam Gardner. I am a lobbyist and I consult here in Salt Lake and also in Washington, D.C. a little bit.
Love it.
Rusty Cannon with the Utah Credit Union Association. Handle advocacy for Utah's credit unions.
Love that. Producer Peter's here, too. Hi, Producer Peter.
Hi, everybody.
It's good to see you. And look, you're wearing logoed ABC4 gear today.
I sure am. Everyone, check it out. ABC4 Utah.
And if you're watching on TV, I decided I look like a K-pop demon hunter in this dress because...
It's a look.
Yeah, it's got a little collar. It feels a little... K-pop demon
hunter. This will get my kids to watch the show.
We're going up. It's our moment. Okay.
That was impressive.
Let's go into a rather serious topic, shall we, after I sang on this podcast. The Israel-Hamas ceasefire. We know at this moment that there are some conversations happening about solidifying this ceasefire. President Donald Trump announcing that they have agreed to the first phase of a peace plan after 2 years of this war in the Middle East. What do you guys make of this? Who should get credit for this, too? That's one of the questions that seems to be floating around out there.
Well, Adam, I'm going to say Donald Trump will want credit for this. He will
want credit, or does he deserve credit?
Well, I think you can make a good case that he deserves a lot of it. And I think in all fairness, you have to ask yourself what changed, right? Why is there a peace deal coming forward now? I think a lot of it has to do with the inroads that Israel's made recently militarily in the Gaza Strip. You know, expanding what they've controlled, those kinds of things. But there's also what the U.S. How they dealt with Iran in recent months or in the last year, along with Israel. Those kinds of decisive steps, I think, have sort of pushed the chess pieces to different places on the table at this point. I think some credit, at least, deserves to, you know, go to the president.
Adam, how do you see this?
Look, I'm not a fan of this administration, but not everything that Donald Trump does is wrong. And I think... it was really advantageous because you kind of had a president who was a little unhinged, and that helps Israel a lot. Like Rusty was saying, it made a big deal that they were able to go in and take care of Iran when they were making threats and when they were funding other terrorist groups. They were backing up Israel enough to where Israel could go into Gaza and do what they needed to do and search for those hostages. Now, keep in mind, at any time, Hamas, who is claiming there was a genocide in Israel, could have released the hostages and the fighting most likely would have stopped. So you had a few world leaders, Canada, Britain, France, they were making the argument that we should go and negotiate a Palestinian state. And if you guys could have your own state, then you can release the hostages, the war would end. I think that was the wrong way to go. Trump agreed that was a stupid way to go. And he said, we are going to rain down thunder on Gaza if you don't release the hostages and end the war. And in return, Israel will release a bunch of terrorists back into Hamas-controlled Gaza Strip. That seems like a fair trade. I think Israel's getting the raw end of the deal, but that's okay. It's going to end the war. And I think Donald Trump actually deserves a lot of credit for this.
So, Rusty, what's next in there? Because we're hearing that this is the first phase of these peace talks. To Adam's point, the exchange of Israeli hostages for Palestinian prisoners and the partial withdrawal of Israeli troops from Gaza. What is phase two or three or four? How many phases are there?
Well, I'm unfortunately skeptical that it gets to phase two, three, or four. I hope it does, right? We've heard this before. They've tried this before. The question that's still unanswered in my mind is why Hamas will actually give up the hostages, because at that point they have no leverage, and I don't see a lot keeping from keeping anybody from wiping them out at that point. So we'll have to wait and see. I'm hopeful that it's going to take place. Maybe things have changed enough on the ground there where they're just in a no-win situation. They have to do this. But I am cautiously optimistic they'll get to these next steps. But I kind of have to say I'll believe it when I see it. But I don't want to be a downer on this.
Adam, do you have any final thoughts?
Yeah, I think Qatar was big in helping to negotiate this. Qatar is a very U.S.-friendly but also terrorist-sponsored state. Hamas leaders live in Qatar. They fund Hamas. They fund the Muslim Brotherhood. They fund terrorist organizations. But they also fund a U.S. airbase in Qatar, and they fund a lot of university programs in the United States. So they're straddling both sides of the fence. I think this goes to their credibility a lot. They have a lot at stake in making sure Hamas follows through on releasing those hostages. Plus, they also need to regroup. A lot of their people are dead. A lot of Hamas terrorists are dead. And they need that Gaza aid and money to start flowing back into the Gaza Strip so Hamas can regroup and fund itself.
A tense situation for sure. We know with deals like this, things can change on a dime, right? Mm-hmm. So this could all blow up by the time you're listening to this. So we'll hope for... let's hope for world peace, right? That's the expression. Everyone wants world peace. All right, let's turn to day 9 of the government shutdown, because here we are. It's been more than a week now. The government is shut down. I was in Zion National Park yesterday, and I could see the impacts of the government shutdown here in Utah, here in our national parks. We'll get to that in a second. Rusty, I want to start with you, though. The fighting over Republicans and Democrats in Congress and really in the Senate is the stalemate over Obamacare subsidies and Medicaid cuts. Obviously, what we know right now is Democrats want to increase spending. That's why the Republicans are blaming Democrats for the shutdown. But Democrats say, well, Republicans are in charge of the government and they should at least control all the branches, right? And they should come to Democrats and at least negotiate at this point these health these tax credits and or Medicare, putting the Medicare funding back in that was taken out in the Big Beautiful Bill. Rusty, talk to me about what's going on with these Obamacare subsidies.
So, the problem with these subsidies is that they're hiding the true cost of it. This is the same way with any government program.
Who's hiding the cost?
The government, right? Okay. Because of the way Obamacare is structured. I'm using my hands, so hopefully people are watching on video. But the costs of Obamacare or healthcare in general obviously are skyrocketing, or just it's an upward slope every year. So originally when Obamacare was set up, somebody was maybe paying, say, $2,000 a year for their premium. The rest of it was covered by taxpayers. That's the subsidy. But then they capped it. So that has stayed level, and then during COVID, with their reconciliation bill, Democrats added another subsidy to knock it down from, say, $2,000 to $1,000. But all the while, the costs on top of that have gone from additional $3,000 to $5,000 to $7,000 to $8,000 to $10,000 of the actual cost. Any self-employed individual would know this. You see this because you actually pay your actual premiums every year. You've seen that high, you know, that higher cost just continue to escalate. So the debate now is that with that COVID measure pushing it down to, say, 1,000, it's now at the end of 2025 going to go pop up back to 2,000.
So that's why people are saying premiums are going to go up.
Exactly.
If we don't extend these tax credits, right?
But it hides the fact that the overall cost is now, say, $10,000 overall. It's not just going from 1,000 to 2,000. It's what that person is paying is going from 1,000 to 2,000. That's what they're debating. The other thing that bill did during COVID is it removed the cap on who could qualify. It used to cap at 400% of the federal poverty level. That's like $125,000-$150,000 for a family of four in the household. They removed that cap entirely. They want to keep the cap off. So basically, if you make $300,000 a year, you can get this subsidy. So this is largely a subsidy for very wealthy people on a dollar basis. That's what they're defending.
So you're saying that Republicans are justified. I'm assuming this is what you're saying. Republicans are justifying for not wanting this.
And they shouldn't cave. Like, I'm sorry, Marjorie Taylor Greene, MTG, whatever you want to call her, quit being a wuss. I mean, she's already backed down on this thing. Well, I heard from my son-in-law, their premiums are going to double. Well, okay, so it's now an okay policy because it might hurt someone you know. I mean, it's just, it makes no sense. This is not a time for Republicans to cave. This is the wrong, this whole Obamacare thing, this is at least opening everybody's eyes to the fact that it is not affordable as a country.
And I'll
this
just say,
something that is
I
just
was
too expensive.
I was in Obamacare, you know, being self-employed, mm-hmm. and I was spending every year monthly bill. We rarely go to the doctor.
Are you saying you're mooching
family.
Off the government? I'm just kidding.
No, I was forced to pay the government for my health care, and we were paying $2,200 a month.
That's a lot.
For health insurance.
Yeah.
Astronomical.
So, Adam, do you see it the same way Rusty does, that these premiums are going to go up? the cost of healthcare is going up. The premiums are going up too. And we can't afford to pay these high premiums.
I make it a policy in my life never to question Rusty on financial matters. And so I'm not going to here, but as a matter of policy and negotiations, look, Democrats have not been able to stop this White House from anything. President Trump has done executive orders like crazy. Most of them are, some of them are being stopped in the courts. A lot of them are being told they can continue. Congress really isn't doing much of anything. So Democrats are stuck. They need to show their constituents. They need to show the American people, we are fighting for you. And this just happens to coincide where Republicans need to fund the government. The government needs to get funded. We need to pass a continuing resolution to keep the government open till the end of the year. We're currently shut down. We can't go to national parks. And so,
wait, I thought we could.
We can go, but I'll tell you who's paying for it.
Democrats are just grasping at anything. We got to fight for something, and their constituents need to show we're fighting for you. We're fighting for something. This just happens to be this thing. Does it have to be right now? No. They're not set to expire right now. So we can have this discussion later. Do Republicans in the end say, we promise you we will have this discussion and bring it up for a vote early next year? You just have to keep the government open. That's kind of what we're debating.
Why should Democrats trust Republicans to do that? Do you think they'll actually do it?
Neither side keeps their word. So it's whenever the Democrats are in control, they ram things down the Republicans' throat. And the same thing happens when Republicans are in charge to get back at Democrats. So can they trust each other? No. But right now, they're not even talking. And divorced parents sometimes need to talk and
they
work things out for the kids.
They need to co-parent for the kids.
For the children.
But does this end when Democrats cave or when Republicans say, we'll talk about it later?
Yep.
Both?
I think both things have to happen.
I think you could see this drag on for a bit of time.
Yeah.
I don't think either side is cracking at this point. And to your point, we start talking about national parks. Most people right now, their lives are pretty much the same. Where I think this might get ugly is if flights start to get significantly delayed, travel plan, like that's something you don't mess
with. One side will cave when they realize their side is being impacted.
Well, or any, yeah.
I mean, Burbank Airport has no traffic, air traffic controllers. Nashville is losing theirs. They're going dark for 5 hours a day.
If that bubbles up, that will end the shutdown, I guarantee it.
Peter, jump in here because I think there's
airport
been some
in Washington as Airport is being affected as of today.
If you want to make a point, you shut down Reagan Airport because that's where every member of Congress flies.
I think it's about to suddenly become very visible for certain members of the government.
Yeah. Peter, wasn't there an update though today that we don't want troops and military people to miss another paycheck, right?
Yes. It was Mike Johnson was quoted in Politico the other day as saying that the real target right now is to try and have the government reopen by the 15th at the latest so that we can ensure that military families and people on furlough are not going to miss their next check.
They get paid today because it's Friday, right?
So furloughed workers right now are getting their last paycheck tomorrow. Because they're being paid in arrears for the previous 2 weeks of work. But if the government is not reopened soon, furloughed workers are going to start missing checks. I think we're seeing the rubber meet the road on a lot of these issues that people are very visible to people, not just in the government.
Yeah. Okay, we'll see how it all shakes out. All right, speaking of the federal shutdown, one thing it impacts here in Utah is our national parks. We have five of them. We have Cedar Breaks National Monument. And I did some reporting this week, went down to Zion National Park, and found out that the state is paying about $8,000 a day, but that is to fund all seven visitor centers at our five national parks. There's two at Canyonlands and one at Cedar Breaks National Monument. You guys, when you hear that number, $8,000 for all seven of those visitor centers and five national parks to keep them open, keep those visitor centers operating, what do you make of that number?
I don't think that math adds up. I don't believe, meaning I'm sure it costs far more than that to run, I think is the point you're making, right? So I guess my question would be then, who is paying to keep these open?
Well, I found that out too. And each of the, I shouldn't say each of the parks, but at least two of the parks have kind of these friends groups. These are nonprofits who work solely to raise money to keep the parks operational, to fund educational programs, those ranger programs, right, that your kids go and do to learn about the parks and nature and all that. They fund those type of things. They buy gear for search and rescue. They fund anything the park needs on a daily basis. And there's a nonprofit in Zion called the Zion Forever Project. And they are the ones who, and the state admits this, that they are paying more during this government shutdown to keep Zion operational than the state is. Do you guys have a problem with that? Or do we not care who pays for it as long as someone does?
How awesome is that? I think it's so great that we have these nonprofit groups that people can contribute to keep the park open. That's awesome. I think that's what nonprofits are for. They are doing the people's work. Great for them. In the past, in 2011, I think it was, the state actually came into special session. I think it was a special session during the shutdown and said, we are going to take money from the general fund and fund national parks staying open. That was awesome, too. I couldn't believe the state did that. I thought it was totally magnanimous and great. People get kept getting to visit, and there was still economic development economic activity happening. That's great. They were under the impression that at the end, when we were talking about soldiers' paychecks, at the end of these shutdowns, the government meets and then funds everything that was shut down. So mm-hmm. it actually costs a lot of money to have a shutdown still. You don't save anything. Mm-hmm. They were under the impression, the state, that they would get money for keeping those parks open. They did not. And so I think this time they're like, we have a $400 million shortfall. Federal government, get your act together. We can't afford to pay to keep these things open, so we're not going to. We'll do the bare minimum. We'll pay for toilet paper in the restrooms and that type of thing, but that's about as far as we're going to go. Yeah. And I totally understand.
Let's make sure that's in place.
Yeah, and yes. I should be clear. The federal government is paying for the public safety and public health in the parks, so that's things like cleaning the bathrooms, right, and the shuttle service. But the state says they had to convince the federal government that shuttles were essential. So the state maintains...
Oh, yeah, that's an interesting...
Yeah, that they were working behind the scenes to really get the federal the national parks set up in a good position. Maybe they're not contributing boatloads of money.
The visitor center closes or something. That's actually incredible that they negotiated that.
Yeah, so they're saying they negotiated that. They're saying they set up communications for the parks because the federal websites right now aren't being updated, right, because no one's working. So they set up communications for people visiting the parks. So they're, you know, sort of defending themselves when it comes to, is the state taking a victory lap here? And everyone thinks the state takes credit for... you know, keeping these parks open when really it's this nonprofit and the federal government who's paying the majority of the price tag.
I haven't heard the state take a lot of credit for that this time. I haven't heard anything, so I'm not saying they're not taking credit. I would be oblivious to that if they are taking credit. I think it's great on your show that you're talking about this, that these nonprofits are doing it. I hope that word does get out. And I think the state honestly should celebrate the work that these nonprofits are doing. I think it's fantastic.
And to be clear, I think they are. Rusty, go ahead. Yeah.
No, I was just going to say, I to Adam's point, I don't think a lot of people are delineating. Obviously, watchers of this show and ourselves are involved in this. We're paying attention, whether it's the state or the feds or whoever. Most people, I think they just think it the government's taking care of it. It's open. We're happy. I don't think they're really looking to assign credit at this point, but I haven't heard the state just, you know, scream and shout about how awesome they are. They're just open.
And I do want to point out where the money is coming from the state. The Governor's Office of Economic Opportunity, that is a government agency that promotes opportunities, economic opportunities in Utah. They have a fund called the Industrial Assistance Fund, and that is where this money is coming. So the state is saying, we can't just give out all of this money because we don't necessarily have it. We don't know how long this is going to last. We have to assess priorities. And every day they're assessing priorities and deciding how much they're going to give out. I just found it interesting that where this money was coming from and then that the state was not paying as much as some of these nonprofits.
It's hard too when it's coming from this fund that actually has a separate designation of we're actually trying to help companies retool, expand their economic footprint. Like, we're trying to help economic development. And then when you come in something that the federal government should fund, the problem I have, I think it's great that the state is putting some money into it, but I just know that for every $8,000 a day they're putting into the national parks, that's $8,000 a day where this loan or assistance fund can't go to actually do what it was supposed to do. I get why they take it out of this fund, because you have to make choices and priorities, and if you're not going to meet in a special session to add additional money, it has to come from somewhere. And this program, it sounds like that's where they can make some inroads, but again, they can't use that money for what it's supposed to be used for.
Peter, you're looking at me like you have comments. You want to weigh in, or should I move on?
I'm actually just checking something technical.
Oh, okay. I just misread your IQs.
No. I have a lot of bells and whistles
back here.
Got it.
No. Okay.
Just making sure that something looks nice in preview. You're good.
I will move on then. I want to talk about this finally here in our last few minutes on this show. We know that we're getting new congressional maps, whether that's Map C that the legislature has now voted to put forward to the court. The court still has to approve Map C, but all the analysis I have seen says that Map C creates two competitive districts in districts 2 and 3 if this map is to be approved by the judge. And thus, we have seen Democrats come out of the woodwork now to say, I want to run, or I'm interested in running, or I think I could win in this district. I know you guys are both Republicans, so you're going to say no Democrats, period, full stop. But who do you think should fill these seats? If you were going to work with any Democrats here, is there anyone you want to be running?
There are ones that we want to run.
Yeah?
Because,
elaborate.
Because we know they wouldn't win.
Okay, okay, fair.
Yeah, and I just feel bad about saying names at this point, but there are definitely ones that, if you make them your nominee, I will be dancing in the street. But there's others, too, that I think if they were the candidate, I would be a little bit worried because I think they would be fairly competitive.
Kay.
If you look at the 3rd district especially that has, I think it's the 3rd under the new map, that has the east bench of Salt Lake, Park City, Summit County, mm-hmm. and all of that, some of the north part of Utah County, that I think is what, R+4 at this point or something from R+20.
And it goes down to Grand County, which is very liberal.
That will be a very competitive seat. And so I think a reasonable Democrat could have a shot at it. Obviously, I hope that wouldn't happen. But the one that, so I'm saying it in reverse, who I hope doesn't run would be one that I think could win. As far as
well, and you got a couple of names there. You have You have Ben McAdams, who's talking about running, and he may announce pretty soon. We're hearing, we don't know. Politico was reporting that, Sam Benson. And so you have someone like Ben McAdams, who's already won in a very Republican district. He would be very competitive. Luz Escamilla is someone that I really, she's a senator from Salt Lake.
She's a Senate Minority Leader.
Senate Minority Leader, ran for mayor of Salt Lake. I really enjoy working with her. Stephanie Pitcher in the state Senate is fantastic. I really enjoy working with her and her colleagues like her on both sides of the aisle. She's fantastic, has a lot of great ideas, really smart, an attorney. And then you have another attorney in the House, Andrew Stoddard from Murray. He's extremely capable. Republicans like him. He's appeared on shows like this before and works very well with both sides of the aisle. To Rusty's point, if any of these folks ran, they would be very formidable.
Yeah, Andrew Stoddard was the one I was thinking of when I was kind of saying that in a lighthearted way, that I think he's awesome, and I think he would be a good competitor in that district. And there are others that, like I said, I think would be fun.
I need those names, Rusty. Come on.
Well, let's make Nate Bluen the nominee, please, because then we'd win just fine.
Okay. So I did want to point out that there are two state senators who are eyeing it who we didn't mention. That would be Nate Bluen, and Kathleen Reby is a senator from Cottonwood Heights. She texted me after those maps.
She's also run for Congress before.
She has, yeah. And she texted me right after those maps were put out and said, I'm eyeing a run for Congress. So she is already full out there. So we will see. I'll give you guys the last word. Anything else you want to add here on competitive Democrat seats in Utah? Is it going to be a thing?
No, I think there's two new, more competitive districts than there were before. So
yeah.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think as far as the suing, and let's just keep pushing this thing, you've been kind of been given a gift. There are two districts that are quite competitive under this map. I don't see why people continue to argue. Be glad what's happened, because I never thought I'd see this day. So
yeah, the plaintiffs in the redistricting lawsuit are suing again over those tests that Republicans say are good objective measures, but Democrats say they will forever favor Republicans. So we shall see how the court rules in this. It's coming up October 23rd and 24th. So stay with us. We'll analyze that when it happens. All right, you guys, appreciate your insights today, your comments, your opinions. Producer Peter, thank you as well for pushing all the buttons.
Of course.
You push my buttons every day, but I love you for it.
No comment.
All right, we'll see you next time.